Do you feel like your business is running your life instead of the other way around? I'm Roy Castleman. I've built multiple seven-figure companies, worked across continents, and coached high-performing entrepreneurs. But I've also been completely burnt out. At one point, I was barely seeing my daughter, drowning in stress, and one step away from walking away from it all. That's when I made a decision to build a business and a life that works for me. The journey became Elevate 360. A system to help business owners reclaim their time, find their energy again, and get back in control without sacrificing growth. And this podcast, Power Movers, is where I share real stories behind that shift. Each week, you'll hear from entrepreneurs, founders, and leaders who've walked through the fire and come out of the other side with clarity, courage, and a system that works. If you're ready to build a business that gives you more life instead of taking it away, you're in the right place. Good morning, Power Movers, or whatever time of the day it is for you. I'm here with Emily McSherry, who is joining us today to discuss all things business, entrepreneurship, AI, where we're going, and just to tell us a bit about our journey. Welcome, Emily. Great to have you here. Why don't you introduce yourselves and tell people what you do and how you do it?
Yeah, thanks, Roy. And excited to be here on the podcast with you. So a little bit about me. I'm the founder and CEO of Advise. We are a platform that's really solving the problem that we feel really passionate about, which is the fact that college students and even high school students, that's about 35 million students in the United States, are making all these life-changing decisions about their career, college, without actually ever talking to people in the job. Right. So you can imagine a college student, they're in a big class, and the majority of students go up to a professor who hasn't been in the workforce for years or has never been in the workforce. Or if they're lucky enough to have parents who are in the workforce, right, which is not everybody, those parents only have so much information to share, and it might not be everything for the student. So, bottom line is, we saw this big problem, and the way that it's being solved right now, or what students are supposed to be doing to solve this, is have live conversations like the one we're having today, interview style. You can call it an informational interview, a coffee chat. And I would say most of those conversations are being reserved for real networking to get into particular jobs, but they're missing the learning aspect because they take a lot of time. They take robust networks. And students, especially today, don't have the skill set, or they're getting a decreasing skill set and confidence to actually reach out and have these conversations with people. This is the long answer, but we essentially decided to do the coffee chat on video with professionals. So when I was in business school at UCLA, this was a capstone project. So we got a nice almost 2 years of research and just seeing if this thing had legs before taking the jump, which was really great. And what we did was we went to career center websites at the top universities, and we looked at guides on how they recommended students do these conversations. So we didn't create anything brand new. We weren't the experts. We really went to the experts, took their formula, but put it on video, added technology, added AI, and now we're being used in over 20 universities, in the classroom, by career coaches, career classes, faculty who want to use this in the classroom. And then we're also free for any student to go on and watch from over our 12,000 videos that we've created and put on the platform today and are still growing.
Great. So I'm going to just ask a few questions so we can clarify. I remember back in the day, before I went and decided what career I was going on, I went to a career advisor and I had filled out this form. And apparently, yeah, I was in South Africa at the time. And apparently my career should have been a bus driver. I don't know. So in effect, we spoke a bit before, and in effect, yeah, what I love about what you're doing is that you step into this whole idea of I'm going to go and do a career, and then you never really know what it's like. What is the day-to-day like? What do I actually have to do? What is my I get to work and I do this function, and then this is what I get out of it. That's in essence what you're providing here, no?
Yeah, exactly. And all of, I wouldn't say that's a very sweeping statement to say all, but if you think about government, education, you know, a lot of these places where you're supposed to go for information, or maybe these exams that you take, they're completely text-based, right? They say project manager, CFO, whatever. But a student who's never been in the workforce doesn't understand what any of that means. So it's just, okay, so I get some stuff. Like I think of what I've seen in the movies. I make these assumptions. Sure, I could type it into ChatGPT or TikTok, but you're going to get like random videos from random people. And so we system made it more of a system of a research tool where you can pop in any of those terms. And it's deeper than LinkedIn because LinkedIn has the jobs, they have people, they have the backgrounds, the education. But again, you don't know what this project manager is doing in the technology industry versus this project manager working in construction. So in ours, you can actually hear these quick little micro learnings of people answering these questions back to back. And what's really powerful about it is it takes the average student over 25 hours to just talk to 10 people. But on our platform, you could hear those 10 people answer any question that you choose you want to hear in less than 5 minutes, 10 minutes, right? And then we're also measuring everything you're clicking on, everything that you're giving feedback to, so we can start pulling insights to recommend better content, better information to the student too.
Amazing. So let's go back a little bit now. Let's go back into your own journey and your own life. And you've studied, you've been in the workforce. What was the, I always ask people, what was the catalyst that allowed you to step into the role of entrepreneur? Because it's, yeah, entrepreneurs are just awesome people, right? Yeah, I love them. And that's why I do this podcast. And that's why I do what I do. Because we see a problem in the world that nobody else has seen. And then we go out and we're like, we can help with this problem. Yeah. And then we basically just give everything we've got, our mental health, our physical health, our time, our family relationships to make that work. So there's a real passion there. So just, yeah, I'd like to find out, when was it that you had this idea? When was it? What did you do in the workforce previously? Yeah, and then, yeah, how did you step into this role of, I can go and fix this problem?
And that's a really powerful question to ask, because you're right. When you're in it, it's like nothing else, right? Where you're, it almost becomes your, it affects everything, right? And we could definitely talk about that all day. But I think there's a couple things when I get asked this question I like to talk about. I think one is that I've always liked to, in my nature or who I am as a person, I've always liked to do like lots of different things, right? Or I've always identified opportunities. And that's just what I got excited about. I even remember being a kid and having these silly ideas. Like we would be hiking with my family and I would see pine cones and I'd be like, oh, I can make these into Christmas trees and sell them at school. That's just maybe not something that everybody thinks about, but that was what I got excited about. I liked building things and thinking about that kind of, so that little line of entrepreneurial spirit just built into me. And I don't know if it's just you're born that way. My dad's an engineer, my mom's an artist. They're both very like into education, so who knows, but there's that. And then as I got older, education was always really important to me. My parents always talked about college, so I was always like very passionate about working really hard, trying to get to the best school, the best program. And I think I just really wanted to have true freedom, really, like my whole life. Like I really worked really hard to be able to have the things I want. Like I didn't like feeling limited by things. And I think I did feel I had a unique upbringing in the sense that I did grow up in a town like in rural Texas with no stoplights. There were fewer than 3,000 people in the town that I grew up in. And so I think I just had all these passions, but I didn't really have anywhere to channel them. So there's just that part of it too, where if you compare someone who grows up like that to someone who grows up in New York City, like your pathways are just going to be different from pure exposure and access, which is maybe some of this early planted seeds about why I'm passionate about this also. And I think the other thing that kind of came into this was I worked really hard, as mentioned, and I was a state softball champion in Arizona in high school. I had the 4.2 GPA. I ended up getting a free tuition scholarship to college. I was a double business major with honors. I did five internships. I talked to a lot of professionals, and I still left college feeling really lost and confused about my career, even though I was doing all the right stuff. And so I think I was just really drawn to this problem because it was like, I feel like I'm doing all the right stuff. I'm killing myself so I can get the best job and have my best life. And then none of it really added up for me.
Exactly.
And I know there's so many people have it way, way harder than I did. So I just felt like this is a big issue. And, for some families, when you send your kid to college, it's not a big deal. Like they have enough money and they're like, oh, I'll just send them anywhere. But for me, I went to the college I went to because of the scholarship. And so for a lot of people, like that really big decision and investment is a big deal, and you want it to tie to a job. And if it doesn't, it sets up or for failure or success for your whole life. So then, long story short, I ended up finding a job in LA, in Los Angeles. I really wanted to move to Southern California, and I ended up taking a job in a startup environment, but more like a mid-sized company. I was drawn to it because it was women-owned. And they were creating a new category, which was pretty cool. They were doing the gig economy of consulting. So basically freelance, really high-end consultants that we and we our job was to find them project work across the Fortune 500, Fortune 1000. So as a 21-year-old kid, I was thinking, oh, I'm next to the former president of Disney Americast and Elizabeth Warren's daughter, and like they're women and they're entrepreneurs, and I need to learn sales if I ever want to have my own company, and I'm terrified of that. So I should go do that. And so that's how I got my foot in the door. But ironically, with all of that, I had access to some of the best talent in the world, some of the best professionals in the world, because some of them were making $5,000 a day on multiple projects at top companies, and I was interfacing with them and I was having to understand what they did. I was asking them questions. I had access to their resume, how much they make on things. And so that access and understanding and just talking to people, I realized, wow, if like I had this information earlier in some capacity, I probably would have made different choices. And all my colleagues felt the same way. It felt like getting this download of really special, unique information about people's jobs and their backgrounds. And people who go into recruitment or that type of industry feel that way because you're learning from people and just asking them questions about, tell me about your experience. Tell me why you did that. Walk me through that. And then but that's like the information you're missing in college, right? When you're making these decisions about your job. And then I spent about 7 years total in that kind of industry. I did spend about 4 to 5 years doing operations and learning and development and training, where I would train young professionals how to become career experts in different fields so they could recruit in those fields. For example, Roy, I don't know how much you know about Wall Street jobs, but let's say you're going to become a recruiter on Wall Street in the next month. I would essentially train you with a bunch of other folks. And one of the biggest things I would do at one of the largest recruitment agencies in the world that I worked at the time is I would just teach you how to go on LinkedIn, convince people to talk to you, and have you ask them very basic questions that, ironically, are the same ones you would ask in a coffee chat, right? Walk me through your experience. Tell me about your day. What skills are important for a job like yours? And then I think by the time I got to business school and we were just tossing around business ideas for our capstone, that's when I was like, I feel like we need this network of information, but make it collected or designed in a way to bring it way forward when people actually need it. Because if you think about someone's life and these decisions you make earlier affect everything else. And so I think people are just making these decisions without knowing this stuff. So that's how it all came full circle. And then, yeah, that's pretty much how it came full circle.
I want to dig into a couple of things you said there. Something really that I've been trying to understand in my own journey and the people that I'm working with. You mentioned it earlier on, and this is this concept of freedom, right? And what does freedom actually mean to an entrepreneur? And it's a dichotomy of different things because you actually are free, but you're much more tied. Right. So we go into it with this view of, I would love to have the freedom to do whatever I want to do. And if you don't do it correctly, you become way less free than you've ever been before. But it still feels, it feels free in a sense that I'm making my own decisions and I'm driving my own destiny. I'm pushing my own path forward. And Yeah, I've got to a point, and I'm really blessed to be there where my freedom means that I can travel the world. I love traveling. I love being. I've just got back from Egypt, and I've been to France, and now I'm in Seattle. And next month or next year, I'm going to Mexico. And having the ability to do that is my freedom. And I've worked 30 years to get to the point where I have that freedom. And
Yeah.
now what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to shortcut that for people to understand what does freedom actually mean. What does freedom mean to you in the sense that you're now on that journey?
Yeah, and that's a great point because you're right, like in the sense that I've had to make sacrifices that I didn't realize were going to necessarily happen, or I've had to face certain questions for myself that are pretty intense. One of the biggest things was, yes, I'm free and everyone's, oh, it's so cool what you're doing, so impressive, like all these things, but definitely not easy. And the amount of time it takes to get to achieve your freedom, maybe, or at least the freedom I have in my head, is it's not overnight, right? Like people think it's overnight or see that it's overnight because time passes strangely like that. But one of the bigger sacrifices that maybe not to everybody sounds like a sacrifice. I'm not like, I wasn't living where I worked pretty much my whole career to be able to live, which for me was Southern California. Like I had busted it and I had worked hard, gone to a business school there. Like that was like the life I had built. And then all of a sudden, when you're bootstrapping a company, that's not feasible. But to your point, it's freedom, but also at the sense like I'm not doing that thing that I want to be doing. So then, in a sense, it's if I just had a job, I could be there and like I would have that kind of freedom in that way. But then I wouldn't have my day-to-day freedom that I'm able to create with what I'm doing. And so I think ultimately, it's not to me like doing anything I want to do does not mean having enough money to just do nothing all the time or do whatever I want. I think for me, it is a lot of it has to do with like mobility, right? Like I don't want to feel like I'm tied to a life or an area. Like I feel like I want to be able to pick up at any time and change if I need to in any capacity, which might sound a little vague, but my husband and I, our families are in different parts of the country, for example. I don't want to feel like, oh, we can only be in this one area because that's all we can afford and that's all we can do. And then I have to get a job in that area and close myself off. Like I like being able to create the life that I really want and get the things that I want and not in a more like in an abundant way, I would say. And then for me, I just feel like I know how hard I've worked and also the opportunities that I have and the momentum I have that a lot of people don't get to. So I feel like it's almost like a responsibility to carry that through. And also, what I'm doing is not, I don't know, making mice and selling them or hats or something, right? It can have and it will have a lot of impact on a lot of way things can get done in education. So I'm just very passionate about that. And so if I can have my personal freedom, but then also create this movement or company or way to positively impact a lot of people while I can also have my freedom, that's just always been my dream.
I'm going to come back to that in a second, but I want to find out. One of the things that I've realized is that as a person, I am eminently unemployable. I was lucky, early on in my career, I went through a few different jobs. I started my very first company maybe in 1992, where I was working at a mushroom farm and, just as a packing shed manager. And I was there for 3 months and I started taking mushrooms home and I was selling them door to door. And I started making way more money doing that than I was doing. And that kind of got me on the entrepreneurial journey. I was making 1500 rand a month in South Africa as my salary. And then 4 months after I started selling door to door, I was making 10,000 rand selling mushroom. And I was like, okay. So that was my initiation, as you were, into that. And I feel now that I lucked into a job in 1997 when I came to the UK. I got a job with a chap that really gave me the freedom to do what I wanted to do. He'd been running it for a while. He'd had the same turnover. I came in, doubled his turnover year on year. So I had the freedom to be my own real manager in that. And without that, I would have been out the door very quickly, I think. Now, where do you think you are in terms of you've been in a long job? You now know the freedom of actually running your own thing. Do you think you're getting to the unemployable point?
That's a great question. I think it totally depends, right? There's so many types of jobs. I think for me, like I would be able to do anything if I needed to do it, right? But in terms of happiness and all that, that would be tough. I do though think, and I talked to some of my other like founder friends about this because everyone, or I'd say like a lot of people, when they hear and see you going into entrepreneurship, they're like, that's so risky. You're doing this and you're doing that. But I talked to my other CEO kind of friends in the space, and we're all very convinced that this is one of the least risky things we can do. You don't think we can position our experience and the people that we're meeting and our network into a more senior or more strategic job? But yeah, that's a great question. I think unemployable was probably like not the right. I guess I feel like I could, but I would be ideally like working in a position where I would have some of that influence and that strategic
And then the other
hand, I
thing,
suppose.
you've just touched on something there that's quite close to my own heart, and that's that when you go into entrepreneurship, it can be super lonely, right? Because you decide you have an idea, you start telling your friends and your family and all the rest of it, and you're super excited about it. And after conversation number two or three, the ice glaze over and they just don't get it, right? They can't get it. They just, yeah. And you mentioned your CEO friends and, building this network of other entrepreneurs is so important, because if you just don't have the experience, the power, the backing, and the friendships, have you found that to be the case?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think at the beginning of the journey, it was super lonely when I was a solo founder and I just graduated from business school. And so even if people weren't directly saying it to me, I would know people would be like some of my husband's friends probably, or like family. They'd be like, what is she doing? Why doesn't she just go do this thing? And so those people don't understand it. And they're thinking about like the safety net or like stability and what everyone else does. And so if you're not doing that, people, so those thoughts are hard, especially when you're on your own. And then I had a certain point with the business where one of my advisors was saying, you need to find a co-founder. And once I did, it was so much better in that sense for me because he has all the skill sets that I don't have. And so I didn't realize even just making every single decision on your own is real can be really hard. Think about it, like you're not only not going to a job where you have a set list of what makes you successful, you're defining that every day. But then you're running every aspect of the business and then making every decision by yourself. And yeah, you're just trying to get to that next milestone to keep going. So co-founder is really important. And then I'm also in a CEO forum with CEOs who are graduates of my business school. It's similar to, I forget what some of these other big ones are called. It's not YPO. Maybe that is. But that also really helps too to have an open space where people can. And you'd be very surprised, right? Because I think one thing that happens, especially with social media or anything else, is you think all these people have everything figured out, right? And then you realize, okay, you have a $10 million bootstrapped business and you're talking about how like your problems have just changed. So it's helpful to also have people in all these different life cycles all kind of talking about the same stuff because you realize you're just like on one part of the journey.
And you know what you said there, we do. We come in and we start and we initially build a business and we wear all the hats, right? And as we're wearing all these hats, we do the things we like doing a bit better than the things we don't do, because there's just so much time pressure. What the operating system that I coach, the business operating system I coach, talks about having the visionary and the integrator, and these are two different people, right? And the visionary, I'm a visionary as well, and you're a visionary, right? And we love going out and creating. We have the idea and we get the movement going. We're not the best operators necessarily. We will make it work, but we're not excited about that operations piece. And your integrator, he's the one that is much more excited about getting the operations working. And then you build everything underneath that. Okay, so what's my marketing person look like? What do my sales look like? And I've always prided myself in being able to do every job in my company. So I bought an adventure center in Bedford just before COVID. That was a whole nother story, but One of those things was indoor skydiving. These big wind tunnels, and you fly around to them. So I thought, okay, I skydive, I've done lots of jumps, and yeah, thought myself re relatively good at it. And so I went and learned how to be an instructor in the tunnel. And just that action of doing that gave me such an insight of how they are seeing things, what they're doing, how they're doing it. And yeah, so I've always tried to do that. And it's becoming much more difficult to do that now. But yeah, at the stage that you're at, are you able to do everything that's in your company?
Yeah, I would say between the two of us, we're luckily able to pretty much run everything, which is great. I think you're right though, like certain things get harder. Like personally, I know startup led sales, for example, are very important and like always talking to people. But one of the things I've been like struggling with lately is I'm still doing most of the marketing. I'm doing all like the project management operations. Ryan's really good, like what you're mentioning, at executing things. So he's just really good at, okay, let's do this and let's make this prototype and like all that stuff, which is great. But from a sales aspect, it's really hard to fill the funnel and close the funnel. That's like multiple jobs in itself, just in one thing. But that's also the most important thing to do at this stage of our business is just get more sales. Yeah, we're doing it, luckily, and it does keep our costs really low, which is helpful, but it will be great as we're getting investment or making more revenue to get a couple like experts just run a couple lanes
Yeah.
and be more
Now,
involved in the overall strategy.
where do you think you're using AI in your tools and your, so what I really try and do is inspire people to use AI and just really think about how AI can help. And yeah, so many people now are using AI to create an email, to write a blog, to do some social media content. And it's just so much more than that. It is a tool. It's a tool that we can use to put ourselves on steroids. 6 years worth of work in 6 months. And every month that just, and I don't know what 6 years worth of work looks like because I've built 20 companies over 30 odd years. Yeah, I can see the power of it, but I've also invested 2.5 years in understanding it. Where are you going? Where do you think AI is going over the next few months? If you were to tell people one thing that they should do with AI, where do you see the main power point of using AI is in what you're doing?
Yeah, I think in general, the most powerful thing about it is the ability to analyze a ton of data and apply it to a specific exercise, right? Typically in writing. Again, talking to some CEOs and stuff in the space, I was talking to someone yesterday who's on his second or third company now, and he was saying, I do the job of six people that I would have had a, that I would have hired everybody for back in the day. So I do think for an entrepreneur, it helps be, well, scrappy and just faster at things, right? For example, I think marketing for us, maybe that's one of the more obvious examples, but if you think about our business specifically, we have over 12,000 audio transcripts of people talking about their jobs. So instead of that just living on our platform and living static in a platform with whoever happens to be in there, we can actually extract tons from that, right? Video, audio. Again, talking about my co-founder, he has built this system where he can drop in any video file and we can make almost like 50 pieces of content out of it if we wanted to. So we have 12,000 videos and growing. So the amount of content and insights we can pull from that, put into a LinkedIn post, a blog, email, TikTok, Instagram, LinkedIn. And then we started realizing that's also what universities and companies wish they could do, but they're too big to do that. So now it's become actually a service we provide that's very easy for us to do, but for them, it's hard.
For sure, yeah. If we finish this podcast, I take the audio file, I dump it in a folder, and it goes through and does all those things. I come up with a blog post, I come up with a, yeah. And yeah, I'm an engineer, right? I've been an engineer, computer engineer, for a fair part of my career. And yeah, so I know how to do engineering stuff, but it's taken me a long time to dig into it. So I think now what people need to understand is, yeah, this stuff is possible. And you can employ people to do this for you, but it's just gaining the general understanding and trust on AI that's super important. If you can't use it day to day, go to your fridge and take a picture of the fridge and say, help me make a Michelin starred a meal out of the stuff that's in here. Use it for your holidays, use it for the various things, and just get the comfort going with it, which It's still is, especially people who are slightly older, much more resistant to doing that because they're so scared. It's, AI is going to take over the world, and AI is here. The train has left the building. We're on the journey now. Get onto it and do something with it. If we pivot now slightly a little bit, you're a sports person. You've been doing that most of your life. How do you manage and maintain your energy levels and what you're doing? What I see so many entrepreneurs doing is we wake up in the morning and we have 100% worth of energy we can use today. We give that energy to yesterday when we think about the things we didn't do, and we give that energy to tomorrow where we think of worrying about the things that are coming. So at the end of it, we're 30% backwards, 30% forwards, and we've only got 40% energy today. And for me, it's the maintaining of your emotional energy, your physical energy. Now, what do you do for your routine to ensure that you're the most powerful person you can be? Because let's be honest, that power, that energy, it directly translates to profit. And that's what business owners don't necessarily see.
Yeah, it's a constant management of this, right? I think so, again, some people, or even I do this, right? Like I look at Sarah Blakely or these self-made, super successful people, and you just think they wake up every day like perfect, right? But in reality, like being a human, you wake up, like even today, I didn't feel that great this morning. I didn't have that energy. So you need to create it yourself. And also, like knowing when to actually take a break, I think is important too, and not just always forcing yourself. And I think that in itself is something that I struggled with as a competitive athlete growing up because I would always just push through anything. And so I don't quite do that anymore. But I would say the one thing I'm doing currently, right? Like I always have the physical stuff. I kind of have a physical checklist that I do per week that I keep in my project management tool because that's kind of how I stay organized and also not anxious is just having things actually in my project management tool. So I'm not like, oh, do I need to do this today or yesterday or whatever. It's like it's all repeating and I just do it. And that makes me feel like I don't have to worry about if I'm missing my vitamins or missing this or that. So I just have those mapped out. And then one thing I've really been working on that I've had to work on more as an entrepreneur is this whole mindset and emotional regulation. Because I will go through some days, like earlier this week, I had so many exciting things happening in one day that I felt like that is the version of me and my business that is it's ringing true, right? Like flow, excitement, all those things are checking. But then you wake up sometimes and old track minds are playing, right? Almost like an anxious thought or a doubt or a worry or worrying about things that you're not even going to have to decide on for several years, right? That happens to me every day, every day. And so what I'm really working on, there's this book I really called How to Actually Attract by Rick Lewis. And it's all about it's a very short, good book. But it talks about these little things like that's the old script, get it out. And then every morning and night I have these quick checkpoints of so in the morning it's from this book primarily that's saying, okay, who am I becoming? What am I making? Why does it matter? How do I want to feel today? It just these reflection questions. So as you're going throughout the day, you can have these moments of, okay, I'm having that thought, but it's not like me, it's just my thought. And so it's a constant thing I'm working on, but it's really important because I realized when I was first starting this business, I had a lot of fear, right? I had a lot of like fear and worry that this wasn't going to work or, and it was just translating into my actions. People aren't going to give me money if I am acting like that version instead of the version of me that's maybe 10 years out. So I have to do a lot of work of, okay, what does that version that I'm becoming do, look like, talk like, and like tapping into that is helpful. But it's definitely not a perfect system, but it's something I do every day to continually like level up.
Have you looked at breath work and meditation, stuff like that?
Yeah, I used to be very much into that like earlier in life. Like I've definitely done some. I was actually doing a lot when I was physically trying to feel like just present. And I think I did a lot of it to where I feel more naturally like that. But I do enjoy it and it's good.
My tip for the
And they're tied
top.
together. Yeah, they tie together with what I'm talking about.
My tip for the top is what I do is I get up, I do 20 minutes of breath work, and then I do 20 minutes or half an hour meditation. Then I go into my physical and my ice bath. And what I've found for me, and so many of the clients I work with, that 20 minutes of breath work is a real way to bring me back into the moment and to get rid of the messy mind
Yeah.
and the present. So yeah, maybe have a look at that. Yeah, it's worth digging into. So I can
Do
send
you
you.
do this? Yeah, do you do simple like box breath work, or what do you do?
I'm a Wim Hof instructor. I've got level 2 Wim Hof instructor, and I was just blown away. Well, I was 49 years old when I learned how to breathe.
Yeah, it's pretty
It's,
crazy.
yeah. So I do 4 or 5 rounds of Wim Hof breathing in the morning. Yeah, it's I love a shortcut, right? I love a shortcut, and
Yeah.
a shortcut, right? It's a shortcut. That breathing allowed me to meditate. My mind was always way too busy to meditate.
Yeah.
Going 10 different ways, but when I've done the breath work, yeah, the meditation works, right? And then I do
Yeah.
Joe Dispenza meditation because I love the way he teaches, and I love the way, that he ties. He's done so much scientific research on why this works and how it works. And I really believe that if you understand something, then you can engage with it. So that for me was, and I couldn't have done his work until I'd been on the journey of wellness and on the journey of Wim Hof.
Yeah.
Yeah, for me, Wim Hof actually saved my life. Yeah, in terms of I'd bought this adventure center. It was, during COVID, it obviously became a really painful thing. Mentally, I was just in a total hole. Yeah, and I climbed up this 130-foot tower, ready to jump off at 4 o'clock in the morning because I'd had enough. I was going to lose everything. Three IT companies on this, and I did 3 rounds of Wim Hof breathing. And that was enough to bring me down. And when I came down, I actually went and signed up to become an instructor because I thought this is important.
Wow.
Yeah. And so having that capacity, and now I teach it at one of the best universities in the UK, Cranfield University. I do a course there every 6 months. I do a course there for high performance business owners. So I think it's super, super important to understand all the tools that you have in your toolbox. I love what you're saying about you read this book. Another book to read if you haven't read it is The Four Agreements.
I haven't read it.
Look it up, Four Agreements, Miguel somebody or other. Yeah, I'm not very good with book names. It's such understanding why and how we do things, understanding what the mentality behind it is. It just gives us the ability to step away from it. And yeah, for me, breath work, yeah, really something worth looking into.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I need to bring that back, I think, because I think so during COVID and these other points in my life, I think when I was just feeling like not great and pretty stuck, that's when I think you're motivated to really try some of this stuff, and then you start feeling better and it falls off for me, I guess is what happens. I go through periods of time where I'm very focused, very doing that for long periods of time, and I have all these great results. And then, yeah, I don't know. I either just change it up, or maybe I start feeling better or feeling different. But I've definitely felt, I think what one thing that's helpful to do is when you are doing stuff like that and you write down how you feel afterward, then you know it's a fact, right? Even if you don't feel like doing it, you do it, you feel better. It's, you should do it if it makes you feel better. Yeah. And my first experience with meditation, which was breath work, but not quite as just focused on breath, because you're obviously breathing as you're meditating, was right after college. I was working in this my first job, and I was having a really hard time. I was living in LA, paying for everything myself, but half my money was going straight to rent. And it was just a really tough time because I don't know. I think also right when you get out of college, you think, oh, I did all this work, I'm going to have this career and all these things, but then you start at the bottom again. And you're an adult for the first time, and it's a really challenging time. And then I remember just going through this 20-year-old crisis of who am I? What are my values? I started getting really into that. But then when I read, okay, why do I feel so bad in the morning or like anxious in the morning? And then people say, you should try to meditate. And that's right when Headspace came out. So that was like the first time meditation became more of a wide-known thing. And then I started trying it. And I realized I was never present. And then I was like, what is happening? Because I was just such like an outward energy person, where that was my answer to everything, was like, do more, work out harder. And it was never like filling myself up. It was always like, the more I do, the more successful I will become. And that wasn't true. I was running myself into the ground. And I also wasn't present. I realized like in those moments that, oh my gosh, all I'm thinking about is the future. At that age, I was only thinking about the future. And I was even like mindlessly grabbing snacks or mindlessly making decisions. And I was wondering why I was forgetting things. And so I did a lot at that time. A lot at that time. Yeah.
Yeah. And that I've been pretty lucky. One of the things that I do is the being in the present moment. People think, oh, you're skydiving, you're just such a thrill seeker. And it's not like that. Yeah. The first 100 jumps, yeah, but the next 2,500, not so much.
A
The
lot.
thing is, when you get out of the airplane, when you step off the edge, you have to do the minimum amount of work to live. And it's the only sport in the world that you do that. Every other sport, you have an expectation of living. Skydiving, you have an expectation of dying. And then you do the minimum amount of work to live. But it puts you so much in the present moment. You cannot think about anything else.
Yeah.
Having even that 5 minutes, 60 seconds of free fall, and then 5 minutes on the canopy, just being in the present moment for that 5 minutes is so healing to your brain. It is just so healing to your brain. And that's where I've chosen to. And that's why when I do the ice baths and I do free diving and I do other things as well. And the things
Yeah.
I want to all bring me into that present moment. Yeah. And that present moment is just so powerful.
Well, and that's what I find interesting about the research with Wim Hof method or these other things when it comes to PTSD, depression, etc. Because I've seen patterns of people getting very into these things, and I think it's because of what you're talking about. They can't have anything else override, right? If you're rock climbing on a mountain, kind of like the skydiving, right? I've seen that heal people who are they are struggling with everything else, but they're addicted to this intense thing because that's all they can think about and that's all they can do. And so I've seen it heal people. The same with like breath work and probably other things. Or if you've probably heard of Tim Ferriss, and he talks about if you're feeling really bad, sign up for karate at 6 a.m. the next day. Guess what? You're not going to drink, you're going to go. And it's going to kick your butt, and then you're going to feel great. You know?
His
So,
book, Tools for Titans. Have you read that?
I have it, and I've read a little bit, but not the whole thing.
It's like this big. And that was actually when I had a skydiving injury on my shoulder. I had a dislocated AC joint, and I'd had it for 5 years. And when we got into COVID, I wasn't moving as much. I wasn't doing as much. I wasn't doing yoga and stuff. And I lost the use of my arm. And they told me it was 4.5 months recovery from the operation. And I was like, I'm not doing that. I just don't have that time. So I read everything I could. I found Tim Ferriss's book. And in chapter four is actually Wim Hof. And that's how I found Wim Hof and went through that process.
Okay, there you go. But also
Really,
the Tim,
really
oh, go ahead. Sorry.
no, just a really good book to have a look at or listen to on Audible. Yeah.
Also, listening to his podcast when I was younger also ties into what I'm doing now with Advise because I saw people like him having these movements of basically collecting other people's knowledge and making that really valuable. So we do the same thing, but it's just all focused about jobs. And like what people do. Because if you hear a couple people on his podcast or anything else, or yours as well, right? You hear people can pick up on trends from a couple people. So we apply that same idea, but we just do it for interviewing professionals to pick up on different trends.
I love that. I love what you're doing because I think it's so unusual to find a something that needs to be done that's not being done, right? Yeah.
Yes, which is exciting.
Oh, so really awesome. So now, yeah, just we'll finish off. I just want to where you are in the business now. You've done business coach, business degrees and things. You'll know about EOS, you'll know about business operating systems. How are you actually applying that in what you do? The business operating system that I coach, Bottom 90, it's so important to work on the business, and but we get really trapped to working in the business. How do you take that 20% and make sure you work on the business?
A great question. In terms of where we are, I think the big thing at first was okay, we need to build a prototype, right? We need to get people using that prototype at a basic level before it's fancy. That was really like my big one goal. I did that before I found my co-founder. So we got a couple universities using it. They're all repeat customers. Now our CTO has made it actually like a real product. And we're like in this growth period. In terms of like the operations and like working on the business, I would say that our operations are pretty like straightforward, I would say. I think where we're having more challenges would be like in figuring out how to grow and what are the right strategies. I think the biggest one that we're facing right now is we felt like we had our business model figured out, right? Like we had it figured out. And then there's things that happen that are out of your control. AI coming in and affecting all entry-level recruitment and talent and the future of work, right? Investors aren't just excited to hand out checks about that right now, or higher education in the United States, which is being flopped on its head a bit, and federal government funding is taking things away. And so, one of the things that we're finding, we've always found challenging, is that our mission is really almost like a nonprofit mission in the sense that we are free and want to help students, but students aren't the one paying for it. So we've essentially had to figure out how do we make the product valuable enough, or what do we charge that's still valuable to other audiences that care about the students, but they're not the students. And so scaling that is interesting. And that's what we're trying to figure out. And scaling at schools with a small team, because everyone's like, you have a business, just go bootstrap and sell. But the other thing is, I can't wait 5 years to pay myself. So we're like, we need some funding to accelerate. We've done a lot of stuff. And so we're just at that point where we're like, we need some fuel on the fire. We need to accelerate things a bit because doing all that with two of you is hard. But I also think working on the business, I don't know. I wouldn't say like we set aside a specific time or anything to do that, but I would say we're always, my business partner and I talk every day and we're always making sure we're having the right North Star. And if there's something we really need to tackle, we'll set aside the time and like really talk through it to make sure everything's tracking toward the same, the right thing, the right stuff.
Have a look at 90.io. I'll put a link in here as well. It'll be 90. There was a book a few years ago called Traction, which was Gino Wickman, worth reading as well. And his operating system is called EOS. I teach an offshoot of that, as it were. So it's BOS. And it's really just about what are the nine core competencies that you need to understand, and how, what are the concept tools and disciplines to allow you to do each of those correctly. So when you're hiring, when you're growing, when you're scaling, when you're exiting, you have everything in place. So somebody comes along and looks at the business, and you and your partner aren't sitting there being the only ones that are making it work. The whole thing works without you. And for me, it was so formative. I had two IT companies I was running, and somebody came to me and said, "I want to sell you my IT company." I was like, 14 hours a day, 7 days a week, can't do it, sorry. And I went out and spent £100K on a business coach. And it changed entirely how I see the world. That was 10 years ago, and I've used it ever since. And that those acquired the third company, and I now work on those three companies 5 hours a week. This company. So have a look. I'll send you some stuff across as well. But
Yeah.
have a look at EOS Traction. Have a look at 90. And just actually making that 20% time that you're spending working on the company, but working on the things that you know about. At this stage where you are, it can make a massive difference. Well, it really can. And we have to, as entrepreneurs, and my mission is to help you live the life you love. And what does that mean? What does it mean for you? It's going to be different for every person. But getting to the point where you get stuck in and you grow and you scale and you don't talk as much to your family and you're just so deep in it, that's the real risk of the journey. Right. Having all the tools that are, there's hundreds of thousands of people that have gone out and they've done this and they've grown and they've scaled and they've done what they need to do. So let's take their knowledge. Let's do what they say. And I think that's just such a, the AI world, the way that the world is going, all the things that are changing. How do we pivot? How do we do your strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats? How do we make sure where we are? This is all business operating system is a system to operate your business rather than the operations, which is how to actually deliver your business and work in the business. And that's quite a it's a concept that the big companies use. If you went to one of the big four and said, "Come in and teach me," they'll teach you this stuff. And being making that available to the small businesses, that's kind of what I'm passionate about. It's like, okay, small businesses, there's 99 or 999,000 small businesses in central London. Right? No, it's insane. There's so many small businesses, and
Yeah.
we just don't have access to all of that. Not all of them can spend $100,000 on a coach, right? So
Yeah.
do we get that right? How do we make sure that knowledge is available? So now we're going to wrap up. It's been going almost an hour already. Think about that.
There we go.
What would be the one thing you've gone, you're on this journey, you're successful, it's starting to grow. What would be the one thing that you'd talk to tell people thinking about starting their own company to do? You know, what's the one I talk when I take people in the right path? I say step and go. Right. You know, what would be your advice?
Yeah, maybe two things. I think if it's something that you are thinking about a lot and you're drawn to, and when you finally start it, you're going to wish you started it like a long time ago. I don't think there's ever really a great, perfect time to just start the thing. And once you get on the journey, you're like, oh man, what could I have done if I just started this a couple years earlier? If it's what you want to do, you should go for it, right? I think that's first and foremost. And then to anyone who hears that advice and they're like, that's not reality. I have a family and I need money and all that. I get it. But you can also start something in a small capacity and test things out. You don't have to go from 100 to zero. That's what I did with this. And that's also what I talk to other people about is you don't have to quit your job today and do this 100%. Have some sort of prototype and see if anyone bites. Do some research, talk to your ideal customer and see if you get over 80 or 90% of them expressing that they have the problem that you are going out trying to solve. Get some evidence rolling in your corner. That's not a full-time job. That's not even a part-time job.
Yeah.
Give out some gift cards, talk to some people. And I think that's a concept that you don't necessarily know about unless you look for it. But you do need people before you do anything, you need to know there's a problem consistently with a group of people. And I think if you can do these like mini steps to give you some confidence, what I used business school for this research, that gave me the confidence to go for it because I knew it wasn't like a guess or a random desire. And I didn't just go build something and be like, hey, do you want to buy this thing I spent all this time on? It was an opposite design of talk first, ask, then design. So the lean startup method, right? So.
Amazing kind of advice. Thank you very much. Thank you for joining us. And if anyone wants to get hold of you, I will put all your information, on the podcast and the various locations. But where's your preferred method, Emily?
Yeah, email or LinkedIn's fine. So my email is emily@advisehub.com. So that's advise with a Z, HUB.com, or very active on LinkedIn. So feel free to add me there.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks. Bye.
For listening to Power Movers, the podcast from All the Power, where our mission is to help business owners reclaim their time, reset their energy, and live the life they love. If this episode sparked something for you, your next step is simple. Take the fit check at allthepower.co.uk. It's a short clarity tool that helps you see where you are, what's getting in the way, and what might be possible if you have the right system. When you're ready, come and join the tribe. Power Movers start with our signature framework called Elevate 360, a system built to help you escape survival mode, create structure, and move forward with power. Just remember, everything we share here is based on real stories, experience, and frameworks. It's not personal business advice. Always speak to a coach or advisor before making big decisions. Because in the end, it's about more than business. It's about building a life that you actually love. I'm Roy Castleman, and I'll see you in the next episode.